Elevate your business. Making the moves that matter.
On today's Playbook, we're joined by Jonathan Arnold, a man who turned a troubled beginning into a thriving mortgage career. From earning his GED at 16 to leading a team that closed over $57 million last year, Jonathan doesn't just do loans. He reshapes financial futures. He's a challenger. He believes the most qualified clients are often the most overlooked, and he goes deep. His breakthrough approach? Transformational conversations that reframe how people think about real estate, wealth, and decision-making. This episode is about belief, strategy, and unlocking what's truly possible. Let's dive in.
Elevate your business, starting now.
All right, we've got Jonathan Arnold on our Elevate podcast today. He has been in business since 2003. He crushed it last year with $57 million with his team. And he has a unique belief. He believes that the most qualified clients are the most underserved in the market. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today. So I want to welcome you, Jonathan, to the Elevate podcast. Jonathan, before you got into the mortgage industry, you told me you were in car sales. Is that correct?
I was. I got in so much trouble as a kid. I just had such a spotty, history of getting in trouble that I had a hard time actually getting a job in car sales. And we have this street that has a bajillion dealerships on it covering two counties. And I literally went into every single lot and nobody would hire me, but I found out where they drank and I got a job waiting tables there, literally with the goal of strategically befriending somebody to get me a job. And it took me about 3 months and they took a shot on me. And like the first month I broke their sales record and quickly realized I'm good at sales and found mortgages through some mutual friends and somebody took a shot on me to bring me into their mortgage company. So that started my career 6 months after a short car salesman position.
So you clearly are a strategic type of guy, because you had to think about it. Like, you couldn't get a job and you decided, you know what? I got to go hang out where they are. And I got to go build relationships and see if I can get a job. So not very many people would actually, think that way. So you're very strategic, and I'm sure you do that in your business as well.
100%.
When you got into mortgage, what was your first role? Did you go right into lending or did you start in a different position?
I did. And we started at a subprime mortgage company, which was the largest in the state of Michigan. And I was not the old guard. There had been, I started in 2003 and there had been a pretty established group of people that were like the main originators. And this particular company had a really good knack at advertising. And so the phone rang a lot. Well, the group I came in with, we did not get to answer the phone. We cold called. And it was probably within my first week, they had me on the phones already. I got licensed kind of immediately, passed the test, first shot. Because I did so well in car sales, I could drive whatever I wanted. Come in, go whenever I wanted. And so I went back to my 1987 Toyota Camry. And we, being subprime, part of the deal was we would meet face to face with all of our clients. I would always tell the clients, you'd hear me before you see me, because my car was like a 1987 Toyota Camry and this thing had a bad exhaust. It was given to me by a family member. It meant something to me. And, within my first couple of weeks, I realized my superpower. And my superpower was that I could call somebody and in 30 seconds gain enough trust to have them tell me everything about their life. And I realized in that moment that for the rest of my life, I'm going to, be able to provide, and that this is the way. So led that company in sales for the next 13 years. But in the beginning, it was just outworking people. So Fridays, at 4 o'clock, I'd be in my cube that I shared like a big post with. So it wasn't even a full cube. It was like a quarter cube. And, I'm in my zone just calling and calling and calling. My method was to cross the name off when I talked to them. And I got a no. If I didn't get a no, they're not coming off my list. And I'm going to call morning, noon, and night. And, realize, hey, in the mornings, we get, fixed income borrowers, et cetera. And in the afternoons, I get people on their breaks. And then in the evenings, I can practically get everybody. And so 4 o'clock on a Friday, you stand up and you look around. This thing is, the lights are off. Nobody is there. And I'm cranking until 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, 9 o'clock. And the beauty of that is my perspective was that it's the best thing I get to do because they're not expecting my call. And I get to potentially unexpectedly change their life. I get to unexpectedly completely wipe out their debt and help them restructure and come up with a plan that puts them into a better position.
Right.
But that was the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, clearly you were driven, right? You're strategic, you're driven. Where did that come from?
I was the black sheep. So, you know, I'd always been a very competitive person, but because of the amount of trouble I got in as a little guy, coaches didn't want me on their teams by seventh grade. But I was really good at sports. And so, you know, I just kind of fell into the bad crowd and got in trouble. And it was a struggle. On the contrary, my oldest sister had a free ride, academic full ride through U of M law. You know, my younger sister, U of M grad. And, you know, here's John, you know, getting his GED.
Little Johnny
getting his GED when he's 16 years old. So I was taking a completely different path and I was motivated to become financially independent. And I had my first child really young. And so I was hustling to provide and I had kind of gotten all the crazy out in my early years and was focused on becoming successful.
So did you surprise your family?
You know, I've got a mom, a bio dad, and a stepdad. And despite all of my drive to get in trouble as a kid, these guys believed in me. They really did. They've always believed in me. And so the rub was that I didn't really figure out what my identity was until I was, you know, an adult, you know, and in my late teens, early 20s. And so it was a function of me deciding to believe in myself and to go after it kind of thing that really was a game changer.
Yeah, that is a game changer. I think a lot of kids, you know, struggle. It's the behavior that gets us in trouble that kind of destroys the self-esteem. But having a supportive family who, you know, believes in you and the grit that you had, you know, and you probably built some pretty strong armor around all the things that happened when you were growing up.
Well,
you know?
I'll tell you what. I mean, I was probably the youngest kid, if not the youngest kid in the country that was prescribed Ritalin. So I was 3 and a half, almost 4 years old when I was prescribed Ritalin, which is just wild. They would not do that today. My parents didn't know what to do with little Johnny, you know? And so every single day since I can remember, I was in trouble as a kid. And I think that what happens with a lot of these kids that, you know, don't have an outlet is they get labeled as troublemakers. And I think that the real deep problem with that is that they label themselves as a troublemaker and it gets buried. It's a wound and they carry it and they don't get beyond it. And it is in their heart and they don't even know it. And so, you know, when I talk to parents, you know, when I'm communicating with kids and whatnot, you can see it. You know, it's like, it's usually the circumstances where you don't know why a kid's acting out. And honestly, they have no idea. And ultimately, a lot of times it's because there's this embedded belief that was instilled upon them because of all the people that said it. So it must be true. And then, you know, you spend half your life trying to like figure that out.
I want to talk about your strategy because you're a strategy guy. I can identify with that because I'm the same way. I learned that when I was coaching basketball about being strategic. Tell me, you know, what strategy is working for you today?
It was kind of an evolution, you know, for the longest time, the thing that just took me from 10 files a month to averaging 25 plus files a month was a team. And the model in that structure was not a burnt out assistant that was a revolving door, which is what it was prior to me switching things up. It was a high level salesperson assisting me and taking the weight off of themselves to go out and hunt and gather, and really being that stable 9 to 5, I can count on, if I put something together, they can bring it home. That changed the game for us. And then everything about what we did was smart and strategic. So we used to say the process, it was how we were manufacturing these deals. And on the front end, we tell the clients, hey, listen, we're going to actually truly do what we're saying we're going to do. And then, you know, walk through the math with the clients, walk through the appraisal process and how it differs. And I mean, like every little thing. And so we would say, hey, how we do business is why people want to do business with us. The philosophy that we were using started to change because our market got nutty over here. And when I mean nutty, I mean, you know, multiple offers, 85% of our clients were in multiple offer situations. And so we started taking these things that we were doing and shifting the conversation with our clients, because selfishly, I don't want my client to have to write 7 offers and crunch numbers, because I will crunch the numbers to make sure they're making a good choice, you know? And so we really start implanting the knowledge and the information to help them be a more competitive buyer and to give them a competitive edge. These are becoming very, very, very transformational conversations. I am breaking down this information that I feel is imperative to that client having an edge in making my job easier by being a savvier buyer. And so meanwhile, my wife, who's in pharmaceutical sales and works for the largest pharmaceutical company in the world, pharmaceutical reps are interfacing with some of the most sophisticated people in the world. And what does the company that has the most money to develop their sales force do to train their sales force? Is they basically teach them not to sell. They basically teach them to challenge thinking and challenge ideas and insert information to help their people be more informed as it relates to the choices and the decisions that they're making as it relates to the care of their clients.
You said to me that you are working with the most underserved clients.
I'm talking about the client that your realtor partner, your financial planner, your CPA, anybody that is an influencer in your circle that normally refers you. I'm talking about the client that when they hear that that person is thinking about something related to real estate, they already know they're qualified. They already have a house. They already have the income. They already have the assets. And they know, they assume they already have a well-established pre-existing relationship with multiple bankers. That client. That is the client that most loan officers are not fishing for. It is the basis of why I call this a blue ocean opportunity. Because you've got an ocean of clients. And nobody is having these conversations with their partners to show them what ailments those clients are suffering from and how you have the medicine to change the trajectories of those clients' lives and literally alter the course of where their future is headed.
There is a book called Blue Ocean. It's about that strategy.
You're fact-checking me right now.
Yeah, no, well, I was just checking because I was like, I wonder, you know, what is that blue ocean he was talking about? But it is a strategy to go after the clients that most people don't go after, where there's opportunity. And that's the interesting part in our industry, because you're right. I think most loan officers don't feel that is an opportunity, because a lot of times we put out there that these are the people that are going to shop us the most, right? These are the people that have private bankers, like you just said. You know, these seem like the hardest client to get in the boat. When did this shift happen? And when did you decide to go after these clients?
It was during COVID. It was in the heat of the wildness here that I started putting words to what we were doing. And I started an elevator speech that was essentially, hey, what do you do? Well, you know, I'm an insurance guy. Hey, I'm an attorney or whatever the case. Hey, I'm a mortgage guy. And I solve your most highly qualified clients' problems that they don't even know that they have. The results of that is that your client in a multiple offer situation has confidence in structuring the most strategic offer possible. And oh, by the way, not only does their mind shift as it relates to these things, their attitude shifts. No longer are they timid, they're excited. No longer are they wishy-washy, They're confident. No longer are they indecisive. Their guns are loaded and they are ready to pull the trigger. It is life-changing. And so, you know, this process starts with these challenger questions, okay? And the beauty of the deal is that in the course of the conversation with our partners, you can show what you do with the client. And all we're doing with the clients, all we're trying to say is that, look, we want to be able to brag that our clients are fundamentally making more informed choices than our competition's clients. If the information touches the decision-making process, we are going to insist that we break down the information with their permission. And I will tell you, in our initial conversation, the whole point of this is to trigger objections. Well, why do you want to know how much is in my 401k? I'm not touching it. That's okay. We fancy our clients more informed than our competitions. So with your permission, I just want to break down the understanding of the 401k and how it could apply to the process. Whether or not you use it or not doesn't matter to me. I just want to be able to know that you know everything that could inform your decision. And so can I just break this down real quick? It'll take 2 seconds. I've never had somebody say no, but I do know that 80% of the people that I break down the difference between a withdrawal and a loan in which they're paying interest back to themselves, not the bank, the pros and the cons, how it's pre-tax money going in and it's post-tax money that they repay themselves. There's a little double taxation and how if they change the employer and the new employer doesn't allow them to roll over the loan, they might have to pay that thing back and it might be penalized. And that penalty is 10%. 80% of those, no, what does it matter? I'm not going to touch it anyways. After they understand that, it's fair game to potentially use it. It's fair game to potentially use it as an appraisal gap or a guarantee that folds into the other strategies that we're using. So as we're explaining this to our partners, we get to demonstrate what we do with the client. And that's the beauty of it. So you just have to embody the process and be able to teach it to your partners, which you're teaching them. And that's the beauty of it. All of my recommendations are based on math as it relates to the circumstances. Circumstantially, one of the biggest moving parts is the house you find and the condition that it's in and the market conditions that are surrounding it. But as it relates to my understanding of the market, all I can look at is the evidence that's before us. Statistics, news articles informing us on happenings in the area, trends, and then what I can physically see with my own eyes. We have expanded our airport to an international airport. We've got 5 billionaire families that are on second and third generational wealth that have literally bulldozed neighborhoods and communities and rebuilt them. We've got a 4-decade-old medical hub, and we've got this organization who's purely responsible for creating economic growth. I've got one client that has 800,000 plus multifamilies that lives in California that has a degree from Berkeley, will never step foot in Michigan, and has decided to diversify their portfolio and buy real estate in our backyard because they feel like they have some of the highest upside in the country. They're buying here off of pure speculation. See, the agents don't have these words. Now, when the client hears these words, it's saucer eyes. I asked the client at the beginning of the conversation what their hot take was. When you ask somebody where they think the market's going to go in the next 3 to 5, 7 years, half the time, the most sophisticated buyer, the guy that has the money in the bank, the job, the income, the credit, everything, they're like, well, geez, just a matter of time until this market settles up. What goes up must come down. Is it okay if I give you a quick hot take on it? And I go in. Now, sometimes I can do it in 2 minutes. Sometimes they already get it and I can just emphasize it. Here's what I try to do. COVID, year one, 15% appreciation, greater Grand Rapids market. Year two, 17%. Year three, 20%. By the way, these are record high appreciation rates in our market. Then the rates jump up, 7%. Next year, 7%. In spite of markets that have been down all across the country as a matter of the rates being higher. I call this a litmus test. In spite of high rates, we still are sticking at a 1-month supply and we're still hitting 7% return. What's going to happen when eventually the feds drop the rates, which we probably think is going to happen? More pressure on the market, more buyers in the market. Inventory is not coming out of the woodwork. So we go back to those COVID numbers, probably 10 to 15%. Push that out 7 years, what's the average return? Well, if it's anywhere between 7 and 10%, what has that investment done? Almost doubled. What did it do 7 years ago? Doubled.
Sign me up.
This is where it gets wild. This is where it gets wild. This is a turning point in almost all the conversations. All of a sudden, that ideal client that was stuck at 600. Why are you stuck at 600? Because I don't want my payment over $4,000 a month. Why don't you want your payment over $4,000 a month? Because that's what it needs to be at in order for us to maintain our lifestyle. Okay, interesting. I'm gathering my information from them. Where do you work? Oh, you're there, 80,000. Oh, you're there, 100,000. How much is in your 401k? 150. How much is in your 401k? 200. How long you guys been there? Respectively, 10 years a pop. How much are you guys contributing to your 401k annually? I max mine. I just go to the match. Have you heard the rule of seven in the stock market? Where if you looked at the history of the stock market, any 7 year period of time, even if there's two recessions in there from start to finish, your money doubles, right? And so I have to drive home the fact that, look at, you guys just happen to be lucky to be living in this market and buying where people are buying real estate off of pure speculation. It puts this investment in a category that's almost really like your 401k. Now, wait a minute. I would make my advice based on math as it relates to circumstances. And circumstantially, if you've got a match, I would never recommend not doing that match. However, if you're exceeding that match, I would throw out the idea that theoretically, this investment could parallel that investment, with the dividend being you get to live in this, and that they're very similar buckets. And if you're maxing out $25,000 in your 401k, what about the idea of you only throwing half of that in there, 12 grand? What did we just free up? $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month. What is that impact as it relates to purchase price? We're talking what? 100 grand? All of a sudden, the tire kicker at 600,000 realizes the opportunity that nobody provided the evidence for in that market is beyond what they had initially. They didn't even think about putting their payment in the same light as their retirement investment.
Okay. Yep.
It wasn't even connected. So we connect that. Now we go through this series of questions, okay? Hot take on the market is the biggest thing. My advice varies on different markets. So if they're in a flat market, I say it's a flat market because I'm building in trust because it's a part of my deal. Because if I did my job right at the end of the conversation, every single freaking time, I'm getting, well, what do you think I should do, John? Every single time. But these are the hot questions, the challenger questions, as I will. Hot take on market. The next thing I prompt them on, I know you've been window shopping. What do you think is the most you need to spend? And what's the minimum? I'm always interested to know what their gut hot take is on that. And then how much were you planning on putting down? I ask these super broad questions. I'm hoping to hear 20%. I'm hoping, because then I can circle back to it as I coach on our mindset as it relates to loan structure. So it's a challenger question. I ask how much you put down. You say 20%. I ask why. They say to avoid PMI. I ask, do you understand how PMI is calculated and how it goes away and how much it is? And they say, no, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to pay it. And I say, I just like to brag that my clients are more informed than my competitions. Is it cool if I break this down? Which I might have already said. And they're like, yeah, of course. And then I go on to explain how it's calculated, how much it is, and how it can go away, and how we coach a flexible mindset, meaning what you find determines how you structure. And this is where I get to have fun and tell the same stale joke. If you find the Brady Bunch house that you could lose a small child in the shag carpeting of the basement of, then generally speaking, it's probably going to be on the lower end of your budget. So our strategy is to encourage you to put the least amount of money down and the most amount of money into the property. Now, this is the same conversation you can have with your agent, literally telling them about this challenger question. And this is where you can drop a bomb on them. Again, all of my advice is based on math as it relates to your circumstances, right?
Right.
So theoretically, if you buy the Brady Bunch house, you're buying it at the lowest you possibly could buy it for in the market because none of the improvements have been done to that property, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's important for you to understand that when a property exchanges hands, those taxes are uncapped. I want you to go in eyes wide open and not miss any of this and not get caught off guard next July when that tax bill comes up. So just know this, as is taxes are going to almost increase every single time on every single property that you look at. I'll always be able to project what that increase is going to look like on a worst case scenario for you. However, if you buy the Brady Bunch house, theoretically, you're locking yourself in to the lowest tax rate for the life of your ownership. If you, after the fact, take that 15% that you were planning on putting down and putting it into the property, you're doing the stuff that had it been done to the house, you know it would have been worth more than the cost of the stuff that you need to do, right? So you're doing smart improvements and you're increasing the value of it. As soon as you're done with that, you can petition us or one of our servicers to release the PMI by getting an appraisal or a broker price opinion. If the value compared to your loan amount is 78% or better, your PMI goes away. Here's the kicker. You, at that point, potentially have a better than new build house because you have mature trees. You've got the perfect location. You've got the bones in the structure. And by the way, you just changed the galley bathroom that prior to you talking to us, you guys, husband and wife, are like, ships passing in the night when you're in there, right? You just change that into your dream master bath, steam shower, dual vanities, room to mill around. And all of a sudden, the majority of the time that you spend together with your spouse is where? It's in your bathroom. And now you're naming your first kid after us because it was this idea that gave you permission to spend the 15% that you thought had to go down to avoid your $100 a month PMI payment and buy in the neighborhood that you knew you wanted to be in because of the beautiful mature trees and its location to the elementary school and the sidewalks and its established feel and turn it into the absolute dream layout with the tile that you guys picked out together. It's life-changing trajectory. So inside of this conversation and this challenger question, somebody is getting saucer eyes because they have been kicking tires, only looking for that HGTV ready house. And all of a sudden, there's math to support it making sense to potentially buy the Brady Bunch house because of the tax situation. And all of a sudden, you've got one or the other that completely changes their idea as it relates to what will potentially work. And little by little, as we go through each one of these challenger questions, the scope of what will work on the market opens way up. And I say that prior to the agent having a compelling reason in their heart to get us to talk to them, they're not truly able to work at the top of level that they're capable of. And that the probability that the outcome is going to be the best desired result will never be the highest it can be because nobody challenged their client's understanding of the market. Nobody challenged the client's understanding of loan structure strategy, fixed mindset versus flexible mindset.
This has been mind-blowing. And I'm sure people are sitting there listening to this going, wow. But I want to just remind, you know, like you're educating, you're very articulate about what you're talking about. You understand your market, your area, right? And you're guiding them, which is building this trust, right? So if someone was sitting here right now listening to this and they're thinking about, you know, how do I start doing this in my business? Jonathan, what are some of the steps? If someone's not, because you're going in deep, you know your market, you understand what's going on. You're very involved with your community, right? Because that's where you know, like when you talk about the permits, the building, what does a loan officer do?
I had been involved with our local real estate association's young professional network. They let me in. I don't know why, because the gray hairs are starting to pop these days. But they always do like kind of like this economic address
forecast.
There's a couple local publications. If your community has local business publications, they are so valuable. If you're not just soaking up that information. Take the time to call a huge commercial developer and talk to their PR people and talk about the projects that they've done and the projects that they're doing and their outlook. Get their hot take. Local business publications, most decent sized markets and communities have those. They talk about the development, they talk about the production, et cetera. I did a ton of ChatGPT prompts on, hey, from the scope of an economist, please break down since the 90s, the trajectory of the greater Grand Rapids market as it relates to real estate, manufacturing, blah, 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 blah. And you can just start getting data. Now, granted, some of it, it's a little skewed. Our local real estate association has the real estate statistics that we trust. So usually if I'm talking statistics, I'm going there. You, a lot of times, you know your stories, you just don't know how to weave them in. You know, when I talk about those billionaire families, I weave in a story about President Ford, who was from Grand Rapids, who wanted to have a presidential parade in downtown Grand Rapids, and the Secret Service told him, no, you can't do that because there's too many abandoned buildings. And two billionaires, Rick DeVos and Van Andel, that own Amway and, you know, a ton of hotel chains, were like, never again. And they decided to go after building out the city of Grand Rapids and investing their own money into it to make their future generations have a more comfortable city that they can be proud of and live in. And so I go deep. I go deep on it, and I just seek to understand.
You're curious.
100%.
You're asking a lot of questions. What would be the last piece of advice you'd want to leave our listeners with?
I would package what I call transformational conversations into, you know, this system, because, you know, if I liken it to the pharma side of things, because the symptoms are, can basically describe every single client that they're working with. And so the cure or the prescription is the knowledge that you have inside that you already know. It's just the packaging. We're trained and we think because we've got this shiny product or this, you know, quick underwrite on this deal or this bond loan or whatever the case, that that's what we should be talking about. But the reality is the most sophisticated clients, the one that we know for sure is pre-approved, is the one that nobody is challenging. Nobody is challenging their understanding of the market. So they might be completely skewed as it relates to where things are, what the trajectory of things is. Nobody's challenged their mindset as it relates to loan structure. Nobody's talked about having a flexible mindset. Nobody's talked about how easy it is to buy a Brady Bunch house and that between your resources and your partner's resources, which by the way, they might not have the resources, but what a great excuse to get resources. What a great excuse to call contractors and have them in your freaking cell phone because you've got a sophisticated client that wants to put $150,000 into the improvements of a property because of your ideas. So flexible mindset, hot take on the market, asset sourcing. These are the biggies. We have the conversations every single time. It's the packaging of it. And it's the delivery of triggering that objection and then saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm explaining this stuff. Is that okay? You got a salesperson that's asking you if it's okay if you go through a detailed explanation of making sure that they can make an informed decision. Who the heck doesn't want that, right? And so, you know, at the end of the day, it's your ability to challenge. And sometimes these are uncomfortable conversations. That's the beauty of talking about this with your client, with your partners. It's like, dude, I'm willing to have tough conversations because it changes people's lives. All of a sudden, your client's going to be in a, their kids go to a different school, man. They're in a different socioeconomic class because of our willingness to take the time to challenge their thinking. You are brain tattooing them. And that is lasting impact on their lives. And so I would just encourage people to take what they do, repackage, and then plant that value back in your heart as it relates. Oh, wait a minute. This is way beyond rate. This is way beyond like what I thought was my value to my realtors and people that they normally don't even think that they don't have a compelling reason in their heart to refer these people. So I would encourage you to get your arms around that compelling reason and then start sharing that these stories that you have and start sharing your transformational experiences that the clients have because of your willingness to challenge their thinking. And then you can use those stories to plant seeds for your partners to identify, hey, this guy's in that same situation. Hey, I got a client whose mom got denied by the credit union because the credit union wasn't willing to show them how to create a reoccurring draw against their retirement account and said that they couldn't qualify for both properties. You know, these kind of things.
I think what's interesting is you've come full circle. You said you were challenging child, right? And now you're challenging your clients and you're educating them and you're articulating things to build that trust. So I can completely understand why you're crushing it in your market. So I just want to say, Jonathan, thank you so much for taking time today to share that with everyone. Because if everyone would listen and hear what you just said, you know, repackage your story, right? Have a strategy when you go in and talk to your clients and your real estate agents to build that trust. And you're helping them see things that they never even thought possible, right? Based on a possible investment or a house that they thought they may never buy. And they're increasing their purchase power. So you're doing a lot of education to help your borrowers. So I can completely understand why you've got that trust built, and especially with your team.
Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to Elevate Your Business, a podcast from Elevate, the internal coaching program at Go Mortgage. Glad you could be here for today's playbook. If you want to check us out, head over to gilmortgage.com and click About Us to find Elevate Coaching. Have a question or want to keep the play going? Visit us and send a DM on Instagram at Elevate Mortgage Coaching, or leave a comment for us on YouTube. We're posting extra content, behind-the-scenes action, and everything you need to stay in the mortgage game. On Elevate Your Business, we share real stories and strategies from top producers to help you move forward. So ask yourself, what are you waiting for? It's time to elevate.
Guild Mortgage Company, NMLS identification number 3274, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, equal housing opportunity, equal opportunity employer, Arizona banking license number 0018883. Licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Massachusetts Mortgage Lender and Broker License Number MC3274. Licensed by the Mississippi Department of Banking and Consumer Finance. Licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Nevada Mortgage Company Number 1141. Oregon Mortgage Lending Number ML176. Rhode Island Licensed Lender and Third Party Loan Servicer. Guild Mortgage Company, 5887 Copley Drive, San Diego, California, 92111. For licensing, visit guildmortgage.com/licensing. All loans subject to underwriter approval. Terms and conditions apply. Subject to change without notice. Elevate is an internal Guild Mortgage Company coaching program and not a separate entity. Podcast content is provided for informational purposes and based on publicly available materials or tactics used in the industry. The views, strategies, or opinions discussed do not necessarily represent those of Guild Mortgage Company or its affiliates. Intended for mortgage industry professionals only.
Paula Nurschel, NMLS number 383396. Jonathan Arnold, NMLS number 129471. Thank you for joining us on Elevate Your Business, a podcast for mortgage professionals brought to you by Elevate, the internal coaching program at Guild Mortgage.